it's the, that's the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions right there, and that's a team that's been through a lot as well. They've been through a lot of, tough losses, heartbreak, and they've climbed their way to the top 2 years in a row. So, we're right there, right there.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, and a still-rattled J.D. Bunkus. Are you going to join us this morning, or have the Leafs have you tapping out, J.D.?
You know, you hear Matthew say, they're right there. You can't debate that, right? They're right there. And the Leafs all said it in their post-games. I don't know if you guys watched all of them. I did the... What would your guys' process be before we get into this, actually? What would your process have been if you weren't doing this job? Are you someone who eats up all the content and, like, searches for answers right away, or were you a shutdown person?
I would like to avoid it, take a week of solitude in a dark room, maybe delete my Instagram and Twitter, deactivate my accounts, and then when I'm ready, I emerge into the darkness, and I consume the media when I'm ready, not when it's force-fed down my throat.
Yep. Hey, listen, I think I'm with you. Blake?
I was in my spreadsheets yesterday, that was not for work purposes. That was for, all right, if they're going to run this back, what does it look like? Who's the next Kasha that cheap? Who's the next Camp that cheap? It's a sickness.
I watched with a very dear friend. We watched it at my apartment, and... The second the game was over, he was out like a bolt, like just gone immediately. And I was glad because I wanted no socialization. And I went through the processes of, I lean towards more Ailish, where I used to be someone that didn't consume any of the content when a bad loss happened like that. I just wanted to be left alone. I think this Leafs loss was so bad that normally I have to just put my phone immediately on mute because I don't want to have to deal with the takes and I don't want to have to deal with the chirps. And it's not that I'm like a sore loser. I actually like being chirped. And last year, even against Montreal, I opened it up because there was so much chirp warfare going on that I went, okay, I have to eat this from friends. Like, I called the series down 3-1. I have to respond. I can't just sulk in this one. I got to eat it. This one was different. In the sense of, I felt more like younger version of me, like 2013 version of JD, who watched one of his friends just sit on the floor of a platform at the subway station and watch trains go by for like 30 minutes because he was so sad about, and as I just rubbed my buddy Mike's head, like as we were sitting there, because it was that kind of distraught. And that's sort of how I felt, and we'll work our way through a little some of the emotions of this one, because I think that was a emotional one. And I think that Leafs fans are emotional, and you can see that a little bit online. I made the mistake of going on Twitter after the game and participating in the dialogue, which was a mistake because it wasn't the time. It wasn't. It's too raw. The Band-Aid had just been ripped off. And anybody kind of with opinions at that point, it was just, you knew that it was going to be, ugly. You knew it was going to be an ugly. And Blake and I went to go see Pup last night, and I had a lot of fun in the mosh pit. I lasted two songs, I think, before I fired in there for the night. Right, Blake? Like, I said two songs.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Yeah, two or three.
You
had to drink a beer before you went. Yeah. That's all.
But that was it. Is I went to the mosh pit of Twitter, and it was exactly what you would expect last night. Okay, so we've had sleep, right? Not as much for Blake and I, because again, the show, which was phenomenal, by the way, Pup. I would argue shooting up the rankings of greatest bands to ever come from here. We've had some time to digest. We've had some time to sit with this. It's not as emotional, right? Like, Blake and I discussed... we didn't talk very much about the series, right, Blake? We just said, hey...
Yeah, you didn't want to green room it, right? You want to keep it fresh.
No, yeah, totally. But I met you at the bar, and then instead we just... Don't worry, I had many disappointments, because Chris Paul is also out, and by the time I got to the bar, I was 4 minutes late for the Suns game, and it was over. So that was great. I really enjoyed that. But we were quickly debating the merits of whether or not it's best to be on air right after it's done or to have a little bit of time and space. So we've had a little time and space. And the main question on everybody's mind and the main point of discussion, I think, is do you run it back? That became the question immediately. Like the second the game is done, they hit the panel. And we have Elliot Friedman later today, so he'll help us sort through this. We have Nick Kyprios later today. No Justin Bourne this afternoon. Normally he's joining us on Monday. He'll join us later in the week. And yeah, we'll try to sort through these questions with those guys. But I'll start with you guys. Just what do you think when you first hear that? Like, do you run it back? Like, what does that mean to you? And do you do it? Ailish.
It's really difficult. And I think you nailed it with the, you know, maybe the gut feeling versus the feeling of taking a day or two. And then I'm sure in a week I'll have more thoughts and feelings. But initially when you say run it back, it leaves me with a lot of frustration because that's what we've been doing. And as a fan, you want to see some sort of non-complacency. Like, it feels like if you say run it back, okay, well, we just believe that something will change this time around. And they've kind of done that. And I feel like it's that insanity quote where you just do the same thing over and over again and expect for different results. And I know I saw a lot of people saying that, and yeah, it's a funny little like cliche thing, but that's how it truly feels. And but then when you start thinking like, what would you do? There's just a lot of pathways to take. And so that's the biggest question mark over the next couple weeks and months, is like, what is the route? Major overhaul of leadership? Is it moving a core four? Is it, I don't know, tearing it down? So I don't think that any of those I'm super leaning into right away, 2 days after. But I think the idea of it being the exact same format next year come preseason, that to me is disappointing as a Leafs fan.
Yeah, so I think this is where I'm having some difficulty with this. And I think a lot of Leaf fans are, because you're right. The idea of just losing in perpetuity and accepting it with no change is difficult, right? Like,
and praising that this year was a little better because
part of it was unacceptable.
And like, we got more respect in the handshake line, says Sheldon Keefe. Like, I don't care about the handshake line, the people saying you guys are great. I care about you winning more than
He did say this isn't about the respect business, but it's one of those things where you go, well, then why did you even bring that
why
up?
Why say
you
that?
Know? Like, why even mention it? So again, this is why I'm torn, because this is such a complicated one. I don't think that that's the Tampa team of the last 2 years. I'm just going to say that, especially in a game seven where they lose Braden Point. Like, Vasilevsky didn't steal that series, right? I thought that Tampa had two guys the entire series that showed up, basically start to, I won't say start because Point was not quite himself in game one. He was working his way back from the injury, but essentially Point and Hedman were pretty damn consistent in that series, right? And I thought Sorelli was pretty damn consistent in that series. But a lot of the Tampa players were up and down. Leafs had home ice advantage. Tampa looked a little worn down at times in the series, I will say that. They looked a little slower. They weren't as deep as years prior. Like, they just weren't. They went from having the Coleman-Goudreau group that was so effective to them to, frankly, Brandon Hagel, who was, to me, arguably the worst player in the entire series, like, for both teams. So...
Yeah, but Nick Paul dragged him kicking and screaming.
Yes,
so.
And Nick Paul, like, huge moments for him, and of course it actually reignited the Senators-Leafs rivalry, because Senators fans finally had something to chirp Leafs fans about for the first time in a long time, and I felt that one.
Yeah, being the AHL team for the champs?
But even that aside, like, the Tampa team is obviously very good. Like, it's a very good hockey team, and it came down to a coin toss loss, and I wondered, okay, well, what would the takes be had the Leafs got it done, and blah, blah, blah. But that's not how it works, right? Like, it is a results-based business, and... I think that one of my biggest points of frustration was not even that they lost, was like that's the attitude now, is, well, we're judging the losses as this one was different. But then I go and say, but it was different, and not acknowledging that is being ignorant. Like, they were categorically better than in years past. The things that we all wanted them to do were, hey, the core needs to show up. The blue line needs to be better. You can't have backbreaking goaltending. The coaching needs to be better. And Sheldon Keefe was better this series coaching. Like, if we go down the lineup, the Leafs were good. And there are things that we'll nitpick with right now. Like, again, we'll get into them. But how much of this is just wanting a bloodletting? How much of this is wanting to have the someone's accountable for this, someone's accountable for my feelings versus what the practicality is? And then, of course, the last part and the most complicated part of it all is, like, at what point do you build so much trauma within a group that you start to depreciate what you have? Because I think all of us would agree with this take. They need to score the first goal. They need to score the first goal in Game 7. However you want to say the Leafs lost better, blah, 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 they went down first in Games 4, 5, 6, and 7. Okay? And going down four straight times to Tampa Bay and expecting to win, especially in two closeout games, I didn't feel that way. And when they went down 1-0, and of course they did tie it up at that point, but even when they went down 2-1 as well, when they were down both those times, I thought I saw a team that tightened up. That's just my opinion. If you don't agree, that's fine. But I thought the Leafs having 16 shots or 14 shots or whatever it was through the first two periods, it wasn't enough. They were playing it a little too cute. They looked a little apprehensive. And I went, see, that's what that equates to when you've lost that many times, is in a big moment like that where you say you've learned. I'm not sure I saw it when all of the chips were down and it was supposed to be balls to the wall time. So I don't know. I think it's going to be one of the hardest questions in all of hockey this offseason, exactly what you do.
And, JD, even before the first goal got scored by Tampa Bay, you look, and at one point they were down like 3-1 in actual shots, but like were up 14-12 or something in shot attempts, like shots directed toward the net. And I don't know, maybe Tampa was playing a phenomenal first half of the first period defensively, but that to me is a little bit of gripping the stick too tight. Like nothing you're throwing on net is landing on Vasilevsky. He's not having to do much at all. But yes, the larger point here, this is an extremely difficult question. And I go back and forth on it too. Obviously, I come at these things from, you know, a bit of an analytical standpoint. And it's like, well, it's really hard to see the blow it up, I won't say blow it up, because I think the not run it back option still has Austin Matthews as the core of this team, and Mitch Marner probably is the core of this team. And both of those guys had probably their best playoff series that we've seen from them. So they moved forward, maybe not the best game seven, but so I sit there, I'm like, okay, well, if you don't run it back, what are your paths to getting better? And what does that actually look like? And so can you get functionally better? And it's really hard to see that path. But then I also look, and this is a stat from Jay Fresh Hockey, that the probability of these five straight series all having ended in a seven game or a elimination game loss are about 1 in 28,000. And then I'm like, okay, well, that's where I start to think, well, maybe we can quantify just being snake bitten or something like that, but I don't know what clears that out. I don't know what exercises it, because your only recourse really as a team is like, well, keep getting better as a team and hope that it's different. I don't see a scenario where they move off of Dubas and Marner and, you know, Nylander or something like that, some combination of those pieces, and they're a better team on paper next year. You have to put a lot of faith in the, well, there are some ghosts here and we're going to trade them away. And that's a really hard thing to balance, because, yeah, you're right, Ailish. I feel like if things look almost exactly the same next October, that'll feel a little disappointing. And then I also worry a lot that if you make moves just for the sake of making moves, your team's going to be worse.
It's easy to feel like you want to make a move just to make a move. And like, and I get that. And I think there's a lot of people online as well and Leaf fans that feel like, hey, we need to see some sort of confidence in doing something uncomfortable. And has this leadership group done something uncomfortable in terms of making a hard decision? Doesn't feel like it as of late. You know, the last time I felt that way is maybe with the Babcock firing. And I think that it shows that they're not going to be complacent with the way that this has happened. But at the same time, what is that move going to be? And I know we're going to probably get into cap stuff down the road, but it's not an easy offseason. Like, there isn't one specific thing that can happen. There's a lot of like a trickle effect, whether that's trying to get Jack signed. Well, then so many things can happen, right? If it's moving someone like a Nylander, well, how are you filling that void? Like, there's just so many questions that this offseason is going to propose, such as what is the leadership thinking? Are they going to do what they did last year and just like tinker a little bit? Or are they going to change things drastically in the sense of getting rid of somebody that has been a staple of this core four. And that is the biggest thing. And how we feel today, I think, will change. How I feel over the last 48 hours has changed as well. And I just, it's going to be really interesting off season. And I think this week, especially with media, and just to try to get a feel of like what they're thinking and what their process is going to be, will help us to determine our confidence level. Right now I'm flip-floppy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone is, because again, the feelings are raw. If you care about this hockey team, and this is what I felt the worst for when the game ended, is I'll be honest, I don't have the same love for the Leafs as I once did when I was a kid. I think that's pretty clear. And you know, we made it a profession. It becomes your job. It becomes more of a day-to-day grind. And it's why it's hilarious when people think like the media wants the Leafs to lose. It's got to be the worst take out there, because it's actually financially tied with every media member in the city. We
would
all create content off the... Yeah, I know. It's got
to
be the most absurd thing that has ever... You just have to think about it for 1 second. Like, what do you think the media would want? A deep run, like when the Raptors went to the finals? Like, or do you think that they want the Leafs out in the first round and we have to pivot to talking about the Battle of Alberta and the Western Conference Finals with the Dallas Mavericks, right? And the Golden State Warriors. Like, what are you talking about? It's very, very obvious. But I still care so deeply, so unbelievably deeply about this franchise and just how people who root for it feel cursed, like where they hear that stat of 1 in 28,000 and they go, what am I supposed to do? Like, they just feel defeated. Can you just give me one moment where I have a bit of a positive feeling? And yeah, not winning a first round in 20 years is astonishingly bad. Astonishingly bad. And so I think that you do end up with things where you go, okay, well, everything's on the table. Or I don't want to be complacent, as you said, Ailish. Or I want some kind of feeling that something is going to change. I want someone to show that they care, that there is going to be a change. When I looked at that series, I went, man, Toronto was really good for so many stretches of it. And the one part they can't seem to figure out with this core, and the hardest part to move it forward is, well, what is the unquantifiable? What is the value of keeping these really good players and making sure that you have it as close to what you had this year as possible, but the trauma of losing, and when they tighten up in those moments, how do you gear that up differently? And that's where I go, I think there has to be a change, and you can't have the full run it back. I think that that's where I'm at today. You cannot have the full run it back, or in my opinion, you cannot, because you can't do this again where you go through an entire year and you tighten up again in that moment. You already got your chance to do it. The killer instinct thing happened. And that's why I can't ignore that they lost to Columbus under Sheldon Keefe in that way. And I can't ignore that they lost to Montreal under Sheldon Keefe that way. You can say it's different and that they've grown, but eventually that starts to run a little tired. And I hate that it's just, oh, well, they lost to Tampa. And Tampa went through their own struggles. Honestly, I think that one of the worst things that Toronto Maple Leafs have done is compare themselves to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay lost in the first round under John Cooper in year one. Then they lost in the Stanley Cup final. Then they lost in the conference finals. Then they lost again in the conference finals. That Columbus time was the only other time under Cooper where they didn't make it past the first round when they made the playoffs. And then, of course, it was the two Stanley Cups. Like, they were moving forward. They had made progress with their group. They were struggling to get it over the final hump, not the first hurdle. Like, it's a huge, huge difference where Toronto has been to. The tinkering around it, or the what needs to change, that part of it is, I think, very, very, very debatable. But to me, something having to change is not.
The thing that makes it difficult, especially this time around with what happens next, is what you mentioned, JD. Like, they played... they were a better team. They deserved to win. You know, it wasn't like a different time where they blew it. There was some pushback. They played better. They, whatever, gained respect. And you can qualify it like that. You could say, hey, it was a two-time Stanley Cup champions. The core four actually performed in the playoffs. They got bad bounces, bad refing. But that just like, that's the playoffs, you know? Like, I don't want to hear that either. Like, it's awful. But
unbelievable.
For me, it has to be a change. And this is how I feel today, but I have been in the locker room and I know what it feels like to kind of feel like you're hitting your head against a wall and have the same faces and have the same leadership. And I don't think that a change in a coach is a bad idea. I think that that would be a new face, a new voice, a new type of pathway. And that to me seems like the route that I would take today on Monday, May 16th, in my fresh perspective of 2 days of feeling this way. And I'm sure that there will be reasons for that to change in this week, but that was how I would feel today. And I think that maybe it's my player perspective of having a coach and knowing what that does to a leadership in a room. You're not going to trade Tavares. I don't see them moving off of Matthews and Marner. And if that's your core right now, and maybe Nylander's on the cusp and he could be traded, where's your big move? And I think that that could be a Sheldon Keefe, Barry Trotz type of switcheroo.
Okay, so go ahead, Blake.
Oh, yeah. Just first of all, Trotz is really interesting, not only because coaches of that quality don't hit the free agent market in timing that lines up so well very often, but he also has experience in this situation, right? Like that Washington Capitals team lost in the second round 3 times in a row. And so they were in a similar situation. It wasn't as long, but he won a cup after. Now, he also lost to the Islanders or to the Lightning twice in the playoffs with the Islanders. So maybe he's not the guy to figure out Tampa, but maybe that's not the move anyway. In terms of Keefe in general, it's tough because like I don't look at a ton of things in this series and be like, well, Keefe messed this up. Keefe messed that up.
Right. It's like, hard to like circle a move or being out coached or something, right?
Exactly. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, maybe I would have gone with Spezza the whole series. Maybe by game five, I would have swapped Liljegren in for Lyubushkin, even though I understand why they didn't, given the nature of Tampa's play and playoff physicality and things like that. The one thing, and this is something they addressed last offseason, it was way better in the regular season, is like, I can't wrap my head around the power play getting bad every year in the playoffs. That's the one to me, and I don't know that, like, I don't know if that's a Keefe thing. I don't know if that's a personnel thing. I don't know if that's a, hey, Carberry was doing something that was game plannable once he sat down with it for 7 games. But that's the only thing that I really look at. It's like, okay, well, maybe there's a coaching question there. But I believe you, Eilish, when you say you've been in those rooms and 3 playoff runs of the same voice, how do you hear that voice still in a fourth year? I don't know. I haven't been in that situation, but it's got to be tough.
So the power play thing is super interesting because they didn't get that many opportunities, and people, again, have very the one of the weirdest things that we do, but I guess I get it, but is the looking at the highlight clips of missed penalties and then never looking at the other team's missed penalties, which obviously happened, but having this like pure echo chamber fan think where you go, well, this happened to them. And I actually couldn't believe how many people, because I was very much on the online discourse the night that it happened, were blaming the officials for the series. And I went, okay, I didn't like the officiating this series. I thought that it vacillated between way too much and then too little. But I also never felt as though there was a level of egregiousness with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The one thing, obviously, is the John Tavares pick play, which was awful. Like, it's a horrendous, horrendous, horrendous call. But Toronto did tie it, like, shortly after that. And I played out the game of, well, what actually changes? Because the score ended up being kind of the same very quickly after. And so it was harder for me to kind of get around the idea that it was supposed to be 2-2. Because I don't play the game of the, oh, well, if they would have scored that goal, then they would have scored the next goal, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, that's just me. If you want to look at the pick play and be completely upset about it, I agree. I thought that was an absolute joke they called that. But overall, I don't think that the Leafs lost this series because of officiating.
And you got to find a way in Game 7. Yeah, like, you can't let that be the dagger that, oh, there's our bounce. We didn't get it.
The power play wasn't threatening enough, and this is year over year over year, and they have had different coaches, and they have had different voices, and it has been now Spencer Carberry. Year after year, that has not been quite good enough. I agree with you guys. I didn't think that Keefe was particularly bad. I've been on record many times where I like Sheldon Keefe. I really like him. I really like Sheldon Keefe, and that's why this kind of pains me, and I look at those guys and go, you losers, you needed to find a way so that you could ensure that this guy wasn't going to wear the entire loss for you. But again, when it gets to, well, what is the simplest solution? This is often it in a salary cap league. I think that you go into the offseason. I think that Shanahan and Dubas, there's a real conversation there, okay? Like, I think that those guys are not just automatically re-upped. That there's 2 years left on Austin Matthews' contract. This is the final season before he's extension eligible. You got to make sure that that is lined up in the best possible way. Because that was the first time when they lost that game, I went, boy, I wonder if Matthews will tolerate this forever and ever and ever, or what this looks like for him, if he's okay with this.
Especially, I think he loves being a Leaf. Especially seeing McDavid break through and get a playoff success, and like it was a conversation we had about like how long is he going to want to stay there if they can't do something in the playoffs. Hey, maybe they just bought themselves more time. Yeah,
he did it all himself too. I just figure you've got to make sure that you capitalize on these next two seasons, and there have to be serious conversations above in terms of whether or not they have the same two guys at the helm, whether or not different voices can actually also include your leadership, your management core, right? I don't think it's a done deal they come back. I think that Dubas had a really good season in general. Like, yeah, you can point to misses, Mrazek and Nick Ritchie, but you can also point to a lot of successes, and I think that it's still a lot of the apple in the Garden of Eden of giving up those big contracts that's made it so difficult for them to be able to find depth and for them to be able to do things. But I go, okay, well, what's the simplest change? And I say, are you really going to trade William Nylander? Because he's the only one in the core that you can trade, right? Tavares is not realistic. They're not going to ask him to move the new movement clause.
No.
And nor would he move it if he was asked. That has been repeated to me over and over and over again.
Yeah. Clearly, and Dubas has like that's a big part of Dubas's reputation is being a player first management guy. Yeah. And I don't think if you go to Tavares and do that, I think that takes a hit to it. The bigger question I have with all this stuff is like the timing of everything, because Dubas's contract is up as far as I can tell. Like, most of the reporting has been his contract ends when this season ends. And it puts you in a weird spot because we're only just about to get Dubas's draft picks into the like roster mix and stuff like that. Like, they signed Topi Niemelä the other day and what's the other kid's name? Roni Hirvonen. They signed those guys, and you have Sandin and Liljegren about to enter their years where you can actually expect real contribution. And it's tough because it's like, okay, well, this was part of the vision and it's getting here now. But also, like, yeah, you got to decide. Like, we get the benefit of, okay, we took the weekend and we could take, like, we won't get to see any Leaf moves until late June, early July. We get to have all this time. But that MLSE board and Shanahan, they have to decide, like, now, because you need to know. Yeah. Who's at the helm? And if the reporting is accurate that Dubas's deal is done soon, like, this is awkwardly like priority A1 to figure that out.
Yeah, it feels strange to think that he would be getting some kind of a multi-year extension after the Leafs just lost their 10th closeout game. Like, it's 10 opportunities for this core to have closed out since 2018, and they've lost every one of those opportunities. And I just don't know how you can ignore that as a fan and just say simply run it back, or it's as binary as run it back, or that everybody should be safe. I will say about the Dubas in terms of his vision and the, like, yeah, some of the draft picks are coming up, but if you look at this roster right now, the team that was assembled yesterday, the only guys that weren't directly drafted by him were like Austin Matthews or signed, you know, signed, traded for, whatever. It's Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and Morgan Rielly. Like, I think everybody else on the roster he directly brought in. So I can't give him the, like, you need more time because the draft pick cycles haven't been through here quite yet.
Well, no, I mean in terms of, like, no, what no, I get your point. Vision look like. Yeah, it's
I'm just saying it in terms of people who would be saying that about Dubas right now, where they're like, he still needs more time, because I'm usually a general manager does need time guy, and for this exact reason. And you look at pro sports, usually the stability is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Stability is good. Having stability in your organization is good. But yes, again, there comes a point in time where you have to say, well, when is it? Because this is the part that's being lost to the run it back crowd, to me anyways. The Leafs, having lost these past two seasons, have lost a tremendous opportunity cost. Who didn't feel like they were the better team had they moved on this year?
Honestly, right? If they had moved on, we thought that they were going to go to the Stanley Cup final.
They are better than Florida, Carolina, and New York.
People went Florida regular season numbers, Florida. How could you say they're better than Florida when Florida was the better regular season team and they moved on? I watched the Florida series. I watched them really struggle with a Capitals team that was the worst in the Eastern Conference out of everyone that got in and who was without Tom Wilson. They had to have miracle comebacks to beat that team, to put them away. I don't think that the Leafs are weaker than Florida. I think if they got into a 7-game series after getting over that hump, they would have put them in a sack and thrown them in a creek. It would have been over. I don't think that the Rangers are better than the Toronto Maple Leafs. Do you? Like, the scariest team to me remaining was Carolina, and they had real who the hell is going to be in net for them questions down the stretch here. Like, they already had an injury in net. They had to go to the third string goaltender, much like Pittsburgh had to go to if they were in a spot where they would have moved on. Like, Toronto looked young, fast, hungry, dangerous for many parts of that series. Mitch Marner was awesome. I loved watching Mitch Marner play in the playoffs for the first time since 2018. That was a great step forward. William Nylander had games where he put this team, like again, on his back, where he was creating offense. Matthews felt dangerous again. Tavares eventually came around in the series. Like, Morgan Riley was awesome. The blue line looked deep. There's a lot of things to be very happy about the Leafs and build off of. You're obviously not tearing this thing down, but I don't think it can be a tweak on the third line anymore. I've seen a lot of people going, well, you just move Kerfoot. Like, I don't think that that is enough. There has to be something else. And the Keith thing is not that he blew it or that he screwed it up. It is simply that in a salary cap era, what can you change? And Barry Trotz has one Stanley Cup. I'm not even a huge Trotz guy. I don't really care if that's the replacement or who the replacement is, because that's always the thing people go to. Well, who would you replace him with? Well, who would you? And I go, I don't know. I'm not a general manager in the NHL. I don't know who the best coaching replacement is. But what I do know is that at some point, you got to have winners around these guys. You've got to surround them with somebody who's won before and who's been there before and who can preach that different message or who can try to shake something up. So if you're not going to move somebody from the core four or core five, because Morgan Riley's a part of that too, because you can't move two of them and then the other two are difficult and it seems near impossible that you would get a return for Nylander that makes any sense, well, then where do you go? Like, where do you go from there? Then it has to be above the players. Then it has to be a management shakeup, or it has to be a coaching shakeup. Because, again, you're not cutting it with moving Jake Muzzin's contract or potentially getting a different goaltender, because Jack was solid.
I did see a lot of that, of like, oh, well, you could do this and this. And we'll talk cap stuff later and throughout the week. But all that stuff has...
off season, eh?
All that stuff has cost to it, too. It's like, well, if you get rid of Mrazek and then you can unload Muzzin's deal, it's like, yeah, you know that probably costs you assets to do, right? And you already only have a first, a third, and a seventh this year and have traded, you know, future seconds and future thirds away. Like, you talk about how to maintain inexpensive debt. Well, it's not trading picks away to unload salary all the time. So, yeah, maybe some of these young guys are ready to contribute, but... this is the other hard part.
Nick Robertson, they took a look at.
I know.
He does not look NHL ready.
I know.
Maybe he has
Matthew
a great offseason.
He's got to
have the best offseason of his life. Like, he needs to find a way to elevate. Like, but I don't have that confidence. Like, if he's going to be your missing link on the third line or second line with Tavares, like, that's what you're relying on this offseason. It's not enough.
Yeah, and, like, we can talk. Like, I know hockey people are super, super high on Tommy Niemela, and, like, maybe he could contribute next year. You really want to enter next year with Sandin Liljegren and a rookie that you have to keep on the NHL roster because he's one of those, oh, you can't send him to the AHL, he'd have to be loaned back guys. That's a lot of youth you're relying on the blue line. So where I was going with that is just like, yeah, okay, so let's say Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, and Riley are back. Well, you could say, Kerfoot and Mrazek and Muzzin, magically someone wants them for neutral asset value. They're like, we'll just take them because we have the cap space and we can't sign anyone. Do you think he's going to do, he being Dubas or whoever's in charge, is going to do a better job with the inexpensive forward depth than they did this past year? Like, you obviously get a world of credit for having Mikheyev and Kamp and Kasha and Engvall and Bunting and Spezza on these really cheap deals. You found those guys. You signed those deals. But what are the odds of hitting on all of them again, where Nick Ritchie is the only miss in a sea of low salary flyers? Like, that's a tough thing to replicate. And I don't know that you can. And, I mean, even though all those depth guys were really good, secondary scoring was a huge issue in that playoff series.
Yes, 100%.
I don't even think the philosophy can be the same. Even though all those guys that I named returned positive value on the contracts, they couldn't really contribute offensively in a playoff series.
That's it.
Again.
And this is why, again, I think that management has to be under review, is if you're going to take a significant change, you might want to have someone who does not have any attachments to the roster. That mm-hmm. it's a stone cold look at what the Toronto Maple Leafs have, and there are no attachments to things. By the way, I know Liljegren took a real step physically this year, especially down the stretch. You could just see that he was more physical around the boards. He was more willing to take a hit, receive a hit. I liked him at the end of the year. I didn't think that it was a mistake removing him from the series. I think that the Leafs acquitted themselves very well, the ones that were in the games. But I like his physicality more. And the same goes for Rasmus Sandin in terms of, hey, he's someone who can lay a hit and he's not afraid of body contact. That being said, I actually think if you're looking at the quote-unquote drastic-ish moves, there's a real belief for me anyways that you're moving one of those two guys.
Because there are RFAs, though, so can you get a ton back?
I think that you would still be able to. Those two guys still carry a lot of value, given that they're under team control for this long.
Oh yeah, like they're probably making 1.5 on their next deal, right?
I think they'll make more than that.
A little bit more than that,
especially given the seasons that they've both had. Sandin, the pedigree. It was hard for me to envision a Leafs team coming back this year, losing a Labushkin, trading a guy like Justin Hall, and then just having those two guys replace them as cheaper contracts. We see this year over year over year, and I thought it was very much the case in this series. And one of the reasons for optimism about the Leafs was they really dealt with the physicality better because they were a more physical team on the back end. And I don't know if you can just completely swap out your blue line and say, well, now you've got this youth that's here. Because, yeah, those two guys are probably giving you better breakout
and
passes.
And Gio is a UFA. Who knows what he's going to do? Integral part of that last from the trade deadline onwards. He was a steal. He was awesome. And is he going to play another year? Is he going to take league minimum? Is he going to retire? Who knows? Yeah.
Even though Gio was a godsend, like he returned way more than the value you sent mm-hmm. out for him. But if you re-sign him and you're not able to move off of Muzzin, say, well, then you've got a 39-year-old Giordano, a 32-year-old TJ Brody, and a 34-year-old Jake Muzzin next year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you better hope Sandin and Liljegren or whoever replaces one of those guys can inject that youth, because that's an old blue line. Like this blue line this past year was, and Justin Hall's 32. Like there's not, I thought he had a good playoff series, other than the one mistake that we kind of relitigated over and over again.
Hall was hilarious though in the playoffs, where it was like, it would go between, wow, this guy made a really good defensive play to, wow, that guy made a back-breaking turnover. Yeah. It's just one of these.
Yeah, he had every one time. That it didn't result in something negative in game 7, but it was like, oh no, here we go again. Like I just it flashed before me. It's like, oh, we're going to have a whole Justin Hall show again. You have to balance that out too, is like, obviously, if Giordano is like, hey, I'll sign the Spezza deal, you bring him back in a heartbeat. But if he wants term, or he wants, his cap hit was 3.4 after the retention and stuff, if he wants something closer to that, that gets harder, not because Giordano isn't worth it, but because you've got a lot committed to a pretty old blue line already.
Yeah, I that's a great point. And even when I think it's just, again, going to be a very, very complicated offseason for this team. Who is running it? We won't know. We'll get those exit interviews soon. Everyone's going to speak again. Everyone's going to nitpick over every little tiny thing here. But yeah, I would say that it would not shock me. And we'll talk to again Elliot Friedman at 9:00. But it would not shock me if they run it back, or if they decided to clean management mm-hmm. out. Like if they just went.
Everything feels like it's on the table.
Yeah, it really does. Like, and it didn't feel that way after they lost, right? I almost feel like I cursed this. I did this because I alluded to this earlier in the regular season when it was becoming clear that they were going to face the Lightning. And I kept bringing this up to you guys going, well, what happens if they play a tight series with Tampa and lose? And what happens if they play a tight series with Tampa and lose? And
you almost wish that they had either blown it, like substantial mistakes, mm-hmm. and like this needs to change.
I just would have been rather they won.
That'd be my point.
Ideally, you guys know that I would have preferred that as well.
There's two things that I kept coming back to. One is the fact that they didn't tank that last game to face Boston, mm-hmm. and how Sheldon Keefe stood at that podium and said, this is what's best for that team. Well, guess what? It wasn't, because you lost. So you can't say as a group that it was the best thing for you to face Tampa Bay. And I know some of that is just playing to the media or whatever, but mm-hmm. accepting it, really, that they went out there and accepted it. And then you lost to Tampa Bay. So I don't I keep thinking about that. I keep thinking about how they tightened up at spots, how they dropped those forced consecutive leads, and what the value of that is. The fact that they did have a stinker in game four, where they completely no-showed in one of these games, where it was really an opportunity to step on Tampa's throats, right? Like, it wasn't a closing game, but it kind of was. You go up 3-1 in that series, you win that series. Like, that's pretty damn clear. So it wasn't just a bad bounce in game six, right? The way that has kind of been portrayed by many, which is that Toronto just only had the one opportunity and they got screwed out of it because of bad puck luck. I think that it is a little deeper than that. I really do. Again, we got 3 more hours to discuss this, and we absolutely will. If you want to text in 590-590, you want to reach out on Twitter or Instagram at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at eBlake Murphy, or at Blake Murphy ODC. And again, like, we're going to do Text Line Tuesday tomorrow, so we'll have a ton more space for everybody to weigh in. But I am curious to kind of just see today simply the run it back question, like how you feel about run it back. And we'll do that more tomorrow. But I am curious to see and read what some people have to say about that regard. Because, again, people have made good points. People have made horrific points, but also good ones too. What do we have on the
list is next? And if you're feeling bad about the Leafs, it can always get worse. That's next on the A-List. It's Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, 590 Fan? I said it before the break. We're feeling bad about the Leafs for obvious reasons. So let me make you feel a little bit better maybe about their disappointing loss, because there's always a team doing much worse. It's the A-List.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
How about them Reds? Last week.
Oh, no.
Yep. Last week, I just tore into them for their Looney Dogs disappointment, which, come on, as the Looney Dogs expert in the city, you got to do better. Well, the Pittsburgh Pirates beat the Reds on Sunday without logging a single hit in the game.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Rookie Hunter Green was in the midst of an 8-inning no-hitter. The Pirates then get two walks in a row, and Art Warren is brought in for relief, loads the bases with another walk, okay? Brian Hayes grounds out to second base, but the Reds can't turn a double play, okay, and they score on the fielder's choice. Now, they're the first team since 2008 to lose a game without allowing a single hit. Their record is now 9-26. And the Pirates become the sixth team in MLB history to secure a victory without a hit. So if you're feeling bad about the Leafs, you could always be a Cincinnati Reds fan.
Oh, boy. If the NHL was still non-salary capped, we'd have teams like the Cincinnati Reds in the NHL every year, just cutting every penny. JD, the biggest – I don't know how much you saw of this game.
Zero.
Also, we had yesterday was a bizarre baseball day because we had that, and we also had Albert Pujols pitching, which was funny.
Very fun.
But, JD, there's a bad takeaway from this beyond laughing at the Reds. We've bemoaned all year the low pitch count, low pitch count, low pitch count, and how over-conservative everyone is. Cincinnati lets Hunter Green go long because he's got a no-hitter going, even though he has five walks. He ends up throwing 120 pitches, and he loses a no-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
This is tough if you're part of the just let your guy go, it's fine.
Well,
it's a no-hitter, it's special crowd.
I think that it probably was fine. How many walks did he issue to start the
Five.
Inning, two? No, but to start the inning,
he walked two in a row.
He He walked two in a row. I think that if you walk the first batter, and I know I'm nitpicking here, but to me it's like once you've gotten that deep in a ball game, someone's already got to be up and warming. And as soon as you walk the first batter, even though it is a no-hitter, you're done for the night. I'm sorry. We're trying to win a baseball game here. The issue I have with it, I guess, is you're the Cincinnati Reds. And so what's more valuable to you, honestly? Is it a no-hitter or is it a win? I think that's a legitimate question. So
yeah, that's your World Series. Like right. Hunter Green is a guy you can market forever then.
So I don't think it's that bad, honestly. And no, Leafs fans, this is not it's not worse. Like they're so bad what Leafs fans are going through. Can I share with you a quick I thought about it being worse? I was listening to a podcast a day or two ago, and it was telling the story of a team called the Cumberland Bulldogs losing to the Georgia Tech Engineers, and this is a game from 1916, so bear with me. But it's the greatest discrepancy.
Last time Leafs won a playoff series, right?
Yeah, but Georgia Tech was coached by John Heisman. Yes, that Heisman, the inventor of the Hut, often credited with the forward pass. This guy, the story is, he was so pissed off at this Cumberland team that wasn't even supposed to have a football program that year. They tried to cancel it, that he forced them to play this game because otherwise he was going to sue them for a breach of contract for not following through their schedule. So they had to throw a bunch of kids together that had basically never played football, and Georgia Tech was amazing. They beat them 222 to nothing. They injured most of their players.
My God.
Yeah, they beat them 222 to nothing and injured most of the players from Cumberland. And I thought, you know, that's actually how it feels to be a Leafs fan, is now you feel kind of like you're down 222 to nothing with this constant losing of Game 7s, the trauma of Game 7s, and what seemingly feels like no coin flips ever going your way.
No, that's a disgusting score. I feel for the Cumberland, what, Bulldogs?
The Cumberland Bulldogs, yes. They nice. Got absolutely
I thought
smashed.
That was going to go the other way. I was like, hi, Georgia Tech got their comeuppance by losing the upset of the century.
No. They got smoked. They didn't make a first down in the game. Cumberland. It's 222 nothing. It's the greatest score discrepancy still in college football history.
That's disgusting. This one, I'm going to keep trying to relate things to the Leafs. This one, I'm sure will bring some memories up of what it's like watching an anxiety-filled game. Steve Kerr might have you beat, not sure. Head coach of the Warriors had to isolate with COVID, missed the team's Game 6 series clinching game on Friday night. Had to watch on TV. So him and his wife sat down on the couch to watch the game, and it apparently did not last very long. Josh played that audio clip.
Yeah, she sat there for about 2 minutes and then announced that she was going to head downstairs to watch the Kardashians instead. So it was a good arrangement. We were, you know, like all good marriages, you know when to be together and when to give each other a little space. So all is good now, though.
Were you yelling?
Perhaps.
Okay.
So the watching of the big games got me thinking, like, how did you watch Game 7? Were you watching it alone? Were you watching it with friends? Did you have distractions because that helps? Were you maybe watching it with someone you were freshly dating? Did they see a different side of you? There's so much.
Blake and I did the very opposite things. I knew how my night was going to be if they lost, which was ruined to an extreme degree. Down bad. Like, really, really down bad. And I watch it with my closest buddy who's a Leafs fan and who I've been through a lot of these losses with. And the two of us watched it together in solitude with the weird optimism of thinking we were going to be going out and the two of us having conversations, because we went out together after the Raptors beat the Bucks, right, to go to the NBA Finals. And that night when the Raptors went to the Finals was sneaky, not the more fun night. Winning a championship was the more fun night, obviously. But that night is almost like a little forgotten because people celebrated it as though it was a championship because people thought they were going to lose to the Warriors, but no one will ever admit it. And so going downtown that night was so fun, and we were talking about it like, hey, I'm not even ashamed. If the Leafs win this game, downtown is going to be insane, and we have to go, and it's going to be like Bucks night, where it's not a championship, but it kind of feels like a secondary one, like a ghost purging night. And then I would say again, when they went down 1-0, I'll just be honest, I didn't think they were going to win. I thought that they needed the first goal in that game, and they didn't get it. And from that point forward, I was watching with a pretty pessimistic and down eye, especially the way that they couldn't get to the front of the net. Anyway, Blake's was better. Good Utah, Blake.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can't recommend highly enough watching a game seven in a green room with a band who have free alcohol on their as part of their rider. Yeah. That made it a little easier. You got the Four Roses whiskey. You got a fridge full of beer. Drink. That helped. They couldn't imbibe quite as much because they had to go on stage literally 3 minutes after the game ended. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have to go on stage. I didn't have to perform. So that was a nice coping mechanism.
You went to a bar, Ailish?
I did go to a bar with a couple friends, major, massive Leafs fans, which was fun. The whole bar was like wearing jerseys, and we had two goal celebrations that were off the charts, jumping on each other. Oh, let's get shots. Obviously, one was called back.
I can't believe they called that goal back. I still can't believe that some
awful.
Hero ref did that. Like, honest
it
to
was
God.
Awful.
And I just, out of all the calls I had ever seen, had Toronto not scored immediately after, I thought that's going to become the new Gretzky high stick, where people just point to it and go, this is
calling
the,
a moving screen.
Still feels that way.
Screen, a pick play that, it just, yeah. Congrats to the official.
I'd argue that was cool, and we should see more of that at hockey. Loosen it up. If defenses are allowed to do as much as they are and get away with it in the defensive zone in hockey, let's free a shooter with a screen on the puck, off the puck,
truly
whatever.
Outrageous. Truly outrageous. All right, let's take a break. Let's come back again. Biggest positive from that series versus biggest negative. Next on the Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish, Sports at 590 The Fan.